Garoppolo fires. It is caught. Still on his feet is Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle. Flags fly. He's down to the 30. What a run by George Kittle.
David. Football. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, presented as always by our pals over at Zaxby's, home of the famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Go get you some, put them in your belly. You'll be better for it. It's the perfect way to celebrate the holiday season. That's not their tagline. That's Dameshek's tagline. All right, let's chop up week 14 and look ahead to week 15. A off week already that is chock full of news now that the weekend has come and gone, this middle of the week stuff. So many storylines. I want to talk about football, not the off the field stuff. Either way, we'll do both of that with the man seated to my immediate left, one of our favorites here. We're not in Studio 66. We're remote in a conference room somewhere in NFL media here in the Nerve Center on the West Coast in Culver City, California. I'm going to talk to one of Eli Manning's best pals. Used to give him French fries on Saturday nights before the big game. It's Sean O'Hara. Oh, I forgot to also mention your proudest honor, Browns legend, also a digital wall of famer in Studio 66, Sean O'Hara. How are you, fella?
I'm swell. How are you, man? I miss seeing that visual of that Browns jersey. It brings back a lot of good memories. But how fitting that we are remote in Conference Room 100 on the 100th year of the NFL. How fitting.
Yeah, I guess so. A little bit of a reach, but I'll allow it because you're feeling happy.
I was trying. Yeah, you said wings. Tommy liked wings.
You've got the perfect thing as a Giants guy. You got Eli. You got your old pal looking good, a nice send-off if we can assume that this is it for him as a New York Giant at least. But then also you lose the game ultimately, which is what you want if you're a Giants guy, right?
It's interesting you say that because I actually sent out a tweet asking fans what they would rather see in that game. Eli ball out and have a play lights out, have a big game, and the Giants lose, or Eli not play well and the Giants win.
Well, if you're a competitor, then you want to win the game, but fans can have a little distance and say it's better for us to have a higher draft pick, of course.
Well, it was interesting, the responses, because what it meant to me, there were so many more responses for we want Eli to play well. Obviously, Eli play well and a win would be, you know, the cherry on the cake, but if anybody has been watching the Giants, things have not been going well the last 3 years. So in fitting fashion, Eli played well in the first half, and the Giants actually looked like a good team. And then if you are a Giants fan, you know that the wheels were going to fall off eventually, and they did in the second half. I don't know if they got a first down in the second half. But ironically enough, 2 years in a row, the Giants blew a large halftime lead down in Philly where they had a chance to come out in the second half and just let Saquon Barkley take over the game, and they did not do that.
All right, I want to talk more about the Giants, Eli, what's coming up there, who will be their head coach in 2020 and beyond. We'll let you speculate on those things, but let's not stay football Giants focused here with so many other things going on. The first question I have for you, and there's Spygate 2.0, some people are already calling it, up in Foxborough, or I guess in Cincinnati this one was. Or was the game in Cleveland? Either way.
The game was in Cleveland.
It was in the state of Ohio, either way.
It was the Battle of Ohio, clearly.
So I want to hear about that, but first some actual football stuff. I've been saying pretty much the whole season that as much as I love Patrick Mahomes and as exciting as he is, this thing's shaping up to be the early portion of Dan Marino's career, the early to mid-80s with the Dolphins, which is that he is a superhuman performer, astronomical numbers, the likes of which we've rarely have ever seen in the NFL. And yet, it's not going to ultimately obscure all the weaknesses on the roster. And people coming out of the game up in Foxborough now are saying, hey, look, the Chiefs' defense is legit. Look what they just did there. They looked really good, especially as a pass defense. Look out for this team now. Is that the case? Or is it what we were all talking about in advance of this game, that Tom Brady's offense stinks this year?
Things are definitely tougher for Tom this year. Obviously, scoring points. You look back to last year, both games against the Chiefs, the one in the regular season and the AFC Championship game, they were back and forth. And it was, hey, we score, you score, and just it was really who's going to end up with the ball last. this game had a totally different feel. But I'm not sold on the Chiefs' defense right now, because if the refs don't blow that call on N'Keal Harry stepping out of bounds, that's a touchdown, and who knows? The Patriots go on to win that game. So it definitely had a different vibe, and we have seen the Patriots struggle offensively. But by no means do I say, well, the Chiefs have fixed everything. But I also feel like Mahomes, he feels a lot like Aaron Rodgers his first couple of years of dominating.
Right?
And it's like, you know what? Aaron Rodgers, I mean, hands down, people are saying he's the best quarterback in the league for a long time, and yet he didn't have a whole lot to show for it. He's got one Super Bowl ring. He's been hurt, banged up. Now that's creeping up on
Mahomes. I'll interrupt you, though, to say this. The difference between those two is that Aaron Rodgers had, like, I mean, at his very best, the thing that people haven't given Aaron Rodgers sufficient credit for, in my opinion, is that until Devontae Adams, who is his best pass catcher ever, until then it was like Greg Jennings or Jordy Nelson. At least Patrick Mahomes has Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, did he have Driver at all? I don't know.
He had Driver. Those guys are fine. None of them are Hall of Famers.
I mean, Greg Jennings was a pretty darn good
receiver. They're all fine. They're all pretty good.
I mean, you know, Mahomes you know, look, when you look at his receiving core, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of talent there, certainly a lot of speed. But, you know, I just look at what he's doing, putting up with these unbelievable numbers, the way he's doing it. I mean, the wow factor week in and week out. But yet you're talking about him in the same sense as Dan Marino. And it's ultimately, man, it really is a team game. And really, Mahomes, we could talk about how special he is and how good he is. But until he's in the big game, like I think that's – he's going to be left out of that conversation like Marino was.
Well, and also the numbers don't indicate that they're the same powerhouse. You don't have to know much more than to see the final scores versus last year's. They were obliterating, or at least the defense stunk last year too, but they were putting up in the 30s, it felt like, every week. Now they're scratching out, you know, low to mid 20s. Okay, is that going to be enough in the postseason? I still don't buy that this team can win three games, and that's the way things are tracking for them now. However, do you think that the scariest team for the Ravens to see is those Chiefs? Because I think the Chiefs, by the way, if they go up to Foxborough again, and that would be the, if everything plays out after a wild card round, and let's say the Patriots hold on to the second seed and the Chiefs are the third seed and they take care of Pittsburgh, who is currently in the sixth seed, if they would do that, then that would be your matchup. I think the Chiefs would beat them in a rematch. Do you? Would beat the Patriots in a rematch.
The Chiefs beat the Patriots?
Even in Foxborough.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the one thing that's kind of flying under the radar with the Patriots, we're talking about how much they're struggling offensively, and it's like, well, their receivers are not on the same page as Tom, and they don't have Gronk. Nobody's talking about the offensive line. They've been horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they had their guards, Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney, two of the best guards in the league last year. They lose David Andrews early in the season, before it even started, actually, due to a blood clot. So they bring in Ted Karras. They traded for Russ Bodine before the season started. Karras out, hurt his knee, so now they got Ferentz in there. Ferentz has been getting dog-whipped, and that's tough. I mean, Tom Brady loves to step up in the pocket, and he can't because Ferentz is all over the – I mean, he looks like he's on ice skates. And then Isaiah Wynn was out for the first half of the season, too. He just came back and played. They had Marshall Newhouse, who was on a bus stop somewhere, you know, collecting tickets. So when you look at this offensive line for the Patriots, they have not played very well this entire season. That has led to a lot of the dysfunction. So I think the Chiefs have a good shot. Chris Jones was unblockable. I mean, he was a beast last year. He doesn't have quite the gaudy numbers this year, but they've been moving him outside and playing defensive end as well, and so that's changed his numbers. But this Chiefs defense is better this year than they were last year.
And is the O-line in New England bad enough that we can – because we've been down this road since, in fact, Tom Brady jokes with the "we're on to Cincinnati." He tweeted that out or put it on social media.
Apparently they've been on to Cincinnati for days now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Apparently, yeah. Apparently they had some advanced videographers at least on to Cincinnati. But either way, yes. The last – when we heard the famous catchphrase issued, it was after the Chiefs beat the Patriots. And what was that, three Lombardis
and
ago?
They were 2-2, I think.
I know. Right? Well, we declared that Patriots team done, and that was at least 6 years ago now, right? 5-6 years ago and several Lombardis ago. Is this different this time? Is it done for the Patriots? Can they go to the Super Bowl? Or do you think that between the Chiefs and the Ravens and the way the Titans are playing, if they can sneak in, and we saw Deshaun Watson destroy them just a handful of nights ago, are there too many teams that can take this team down for you to see the Patriots get into the Super Bowl?
Well, I think the one question that I always have is, where are these playoff games being played? Because the Gillette Stadium is, I call it the Bermuda Triangle of the NFL. Hmm. Like, teams go up there and they just disappear.
It's
like,
so true.
Bad things happen. Punts get blocked. Shotgun snaps are going over quarterbacks' heads. I mean, it's just stuff happens there that doesn't happen in any other stadium in the league, including headsets and all kinds of shenanigans. So equipment's not, you know, showing up. You know, it's, there's always something. So If those games are in Gillette, I say the Patriots still have the advantage. But the other thing, too, is, listen, if you're Bill Belichick, this is great. You know what the hardest thing to do as a coach is, when your team is on a roll and they're kicking butt and taking names, and you got to come in the team room and kind of chop everybody back down to earth. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, stop patting each other on their back. Stop reading your press clippings. I know your Twitter's blowing up. I know your social media is on fire right now. But, look, we're not that good, and let me show you why. And it's like, hey, man, we've won 8 in a row. So if you're Bill Belichick, if you're a coach and you – have a chance to come in and say, guys, we're not as good as you think you are. I know that everybody thought that the Patriots defense was like the 85 Bears and the 2000 Baltimore Ravens. They're clearly not
good
that
for you.
Same
I've
guy.
Been calling for some time, as Eddie Spaghetti there can tell you. The 85 Bears reference, we always have to update things for the kids, and yet the 85 Bears is the gold standard. And as I argue, little overrated, not the defense, but that 85 Bears team is a scooch overrated. And it either way, we have to update these things for the 21st century kids out there. So yeah, good for you. You did the 2000 Ravens.
Different times. Yeah. And the numbers are different, but you know, totally different offenses too, different rules as well. So, but I think if you're the Patriots and if you're Bill Belichick, you love the fact that, mm-hmm. look, I don't have to prod these guys.
They did it a year ago.
Fire. You know,
they lost at the Dolphins and they lost in Pittsburgh, yeah. And everybody said, see, they're not going to do it again.
That Pittsburgh game last year was when everybody wrote them off. And they had like 5 drops in that game. And then, you know what, Bill fired them up and they said, look, nobody thinks you guys can make another run. Let's go do it. So the playoffs are not always about the best team winning. It's about who's playing the best and who can get hot. And that's, if you can get your team to play their best football in those last couple weeks in December and roll it right into the playoffs, that's where when you got them right where you want them. You don't want to peak too soon. We've seen the Chiefs do that how many times now? Andy Reid, I mean, if there was an award for the best coach through the first 9 or 10 games of the season, Andy Reid would win it every year. And then
it's funny you say that, because that is one of the, I love talking about the cliches and how they're generally pretty empty and what do they ultimately mean. But that is one, that's one of the oldest cliches out there. You don't want to peak too soon. How does that happen? And how can you manage that? I don't know how a coach could it's like trying to survive on only so much gas. Like, we're almost on empty and don't hit the gas too hard or else you're going to burn more before we can get to the closest station. And like how to meet that out, you know, that's an interesting thing that people always talk about that, but how would you properly be able to control whether or not that happens?
It's definitely not an exact science. You know, there is no Pythagorean theorem you can plug in there and say, here's how we're going to do it and this is why. But it's, you know, you look at what Sean McVay is doing with Todd Gurley. All right, everybody's been saying, why aren't you using him? Why aren't you using him? You know why? Because guess what? We used him last year, and he ran out of gas. Hmm. You know, we were like Kramer in the car with, you know, Costanza trying to figure out, can we go another exit? How many more exits can we get out of this guy? And then they're stranded on the side of the highway. So he's saying, look, I'm not going to be an idiot. I'm not going to wear Gurley out in September and October because I want him at his best in December. And look what they're doing. They just beat Seattle. You know, the week before, they got a big performance from Gurley again. So it's like, you know what? 12-4 is great. And it's great to be have the bye week and all that other stuff. And everybody's saying that you're, boy wonder and you're a genius. But what really matters is, are my best players at their best when the playoffs come? You know, we got to get into the dance, obviously, but we've got to have fresh legs. And how do I do that? And I think that's why you see a lot of these teams, you know, they falter because they're just so happy to get there, or, you know, they don't have that plan in place because they're just trying to get to the dance. And then it's like, hey, we're here. Guess what? I got no dance moves.
But it's also, as we've talked about, the other side of that coin is you don't want the pressure of being the team that's supposed to win. That's also not a great spot to be in. You want to have a devil may care attitude, like, hey, we're happy to be here, but you also
The end line can't be like the Bills 2 years ago when they got in. We made it. It's a miracle.
Right.
That was the measure of success for them, and that they lost the following week almost didn't matter to them. So,
or in the core, like the Browns case, they were happy. They went 7-8-1, and it's like, here we go. We're on our way.
Yeah. You know, and then everybody, the world apparently bought in.
But that goes
them.
Back to what I'm saying about success. Success sometimes is harder to handle as a coach and as a team and as players, because everybody's like, hey, you know what? We're great. We're awesome. Guess what? I don't have to watch that extra bit of film that I don't have to do what I did to get me there. And so, you know, Tom Coughlin had a board up in our team meeting room, and it said, practice and prepare as if you lost your last game. And that was always one of the hardest things to do as a team, is you got 53 guys. Everybody's thinking differently. Guys, I know we've won 8 in a row. Practice and prepare like you lost your last game. Because after a loss, everybody comes in. Man, all right, what else do we got to do, man? You know, I got to spend 30 more minutes. I've got to be on point. Well, you win 8 in a row, and next thing you know, you're doing podcasts with people instead of watching film.
I don't know why we deserve that that attack.
That wasn't an attack on you, I'm just saying. You know, sometimes
people
start.
Nothing to do with the end of your career.
You know, they get on the banquet tour.
Well, I've also been on the banquet tour. See, that's why, because you know we like food.
Clearly.
That's what you and I have in common is food. And then spaghetti, look at him. Jeez.
I mean, with a name like spaghetti, you have to like food, right?
Yeah. Let's stay then. Sid, you said watching tape, so that leads us neatly then. What is the explanation for why would the Patriots, because people have said to me now, but nobody signals anymore. So what would you even be looking for if you're the Patriots, if you buy into the conspiracy theory or otherwise that the camera was locked on the Bengals sideline for 8 straight minutes? What are they looking for conceivably?
I have no idea. And to be honest with you, I have no idea how it would help you. You know, I mean, I've it's funny now on the other side calling games and you know, covering games. I've been at practices. I've been at walkthroughs and, you know, very rarely can you see something that's like, wow, you know what? Okay, we're going to use that, and that's going to help us. You know, I mean, tendencies. Yeah, look, everybody's on, it's all on film. Like, everybody, you can watch everything. And, you know, so I think if this was any other team but the Patriots, this wouldn't even be a blip on the radar. But because it is the Patriots, it's a big thing. And
well,
now it's a big deal. You know, I don't know. It's very strange that this happened the week before they're going to play the Bengals. So that, to me, sounds very odd. You know, and I don't know. I mean, there's so many conspiracy theories out there. But as a player, I don't think seeing signals of what the other team is doing or what they're doing on their sideline, I don't think that would really change anything that we would be doing in our preparation or during the game.
Do you think that they are on any level – considering, because I keep talking about this the last month to the anger and frustration of Patriots fans, do you think that this is the end for them? Do you think the Giants, your Giants, say goodbye to Pat Shurmur and otherwise and make whatever you need, Bill Belichick? We know that he has roots back to the Giants. Do you think that the Cowboys take a run at Bill Belichick? Do you think the Chargers or otherwise say, let's go get Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels and see if we can give them one or two more years that way? Do you think that's it? Or do you think what Willie McGinnis floated a week ago, and it was he had a great little almost rah-rah speech for Patriots fans, if I'm Tom Brady, Willie said, I go to Belichick and Kraft, and I say, one more year, guys. Whatever I need, if we need this offensive lineman, we sign him. We need this receiver. We put it together. We make one last run together, and then we go in our separate directions.
I could see it happening. I don't think Tom would ever meddle in personnel, though. You know,
oh,
I
no.
Mean, I mean, I
really?
I
think, you don't think he says the stuff? You don't think
he wanted them to re-sign Wes Welker? I mean, you go back and you look at all the players. Logan Mankin gets traded. Dan Copen got cut. Like, some of Tom's best friends and favorite targets, favorite players, they have cast aside. And Tom wasn't happy about it. You know, I mean, publicly and privately, you know, he made that known. But I don't think he's meddling in personnel. But I think that Bob and Bill are probably going to Tom saying, what do we need to do to get you to come back for one more year?
Absolutely. You don't think Belichick thinks I could do, you know what, the way Brady looks right now, and he does not strike me as somebody who's a loyalist who is indebted to Tom Brady for success. I think that Belichick wouldn't mind seeing how it would go if he had the name I keep throwing out there just to make the point. The median QB is Andy Dalton. Well, Andy Dalton, I'll show you how good a coach I am. I'll go make a deep playoff run with Andy.
Maybe that's what they were filming.
I mean, legitimately, I don't know.
Maybe they were trying to get a little more insight on Andy Dalton. There you go. There's your conspiracy theory. I think when you look at Tom Brady, I still see him make unbelievable throws. He still had a chance to win that football game. I mean, how many drops had those receivers had over the last few weeks? So I don't watch the Patriots on film and say, man, Tom is washed up. That's it. He's done. I think Tom would hang it up before he put himself out there like that, because Tom cares about his TB12 brand too. And he's not going to go out there at less than 100. Bill won't allow it either. So I think there's a good enough relationship and respect there. They're not going to let that happen. But I think Tom's got another year in him. And I think Bill and Bob Kraft would come to him and say, take as much time as you need. Tom didn't participate in spring practice this year. I think he didn't. Hey, whatever you need to do. And I think he had an agreement with them that I'm not going to come to any of that stuff. I just, at this point in my career, I need to spend time with my family. That's the only reason that my wife will let me play another year. I think the same thing is going to happen. But to your point, I don't think Bill Belichick's leaving New England. And here's why. He has complete control. You go down to Dallas, not going to have that. You go down to the Giants, they're going to have a GM. They always have been.
They wouldn't blow Gettleman out to bring Belichick in?
I don't think so, because now what do you do when Bill steps aside? Now you've got to reinvent the wheel and you got to start that thing going again. So I think you look at these organizations, most people can't handle it the way that Bill handles it. And I think the way that building is structured, everything runs through him. That's the way that he wants it. That's why he left the Jets on that, with that little napkin deal, because he knew he was going to have final say in everything up in New England where he didn't have it with the Jets.
I want to talk about the off-field stuff, but the football ultimately is what I find compelling. Who is the team then, if it's not the Patriots? Because I really don't think it is. And by the way, with that high-end defense that we all thought was generationally great for the first half of the season, they've played three good teams now in the last, 5 weeks or so, and each has taken them down. The Ravens, the Deshaun Watson thing was a revelation to me, that they whipped them. Maybe you can say, well, they all had the flu. And then Patrick Mahomes goes into Foxborough and, didn't dominate them, but still won the game, hung 24 on them. Is that even a strength that they can just lean on? Well, the defense will pull it out. I don't necessarily think that it's such a dominant defense that covers up any other warts.
They're not dominant the way that I think that the statistics are saying that they are. And here's my case in point. The most dominant defense last year, Chicago Bears, guess what? They led the league in takeaways. Do the Chicago
Bears
look...
That's the trick now, right?
Yeah, it's the takeaways. That totally changes everything, because now the scoring is down, because guess what? They have half the possessions. Yeah, so you're taking the ball away from them. Maybe in a game you have seven possessions. If you've got three or four turnovers in a game, you only have four opportunities to score now. And if you only score twice, you look at what they did the first half of the season. They were playing god-awful teams with god-awful quarterbacks. So the numbers are definitely skewed. But those takeaways are hard to sustain. And they totally inflate your team. They inflate the numbers. They inflate everything. So you look at the Bears. Mitch Trubisky was a Pro Bowl quarterback last year. Why? Because they were 12-4. All right. Is anybody voting for Mitch Trubisky for the Pro Bowl this year? No. Same guy. That team looks totally different because they're not getting the takeaways. Different coordinator, same exact players. But every year it's different. And turnovers like that, you can't say, hey, they're going to continue throughout the playoffs.
It does
you
feel...
When you start playing better teams, Everything changes.
It feels unsustainable, but that is the recipe for why the Pittsburgh Steelers are suddenly tracking towards the playoffs. It's crazy, and I keep telling people that in Pittsburgh and outside. If your expectation is, we should beat that team. The Steelers should go down to Arizona win. They should beat the Jets. There's no should beat anybody. Yeah. They're playing the third string free agent rookie. There's no except, and the only way it keeps going is not just to play really, really dominant defense, really strong defense by 21st century standards, 15 points a game or thereabouts. You have to take the ball away consistently, and that's the method by which I'm waiting for the bottom to fall out on that.
I feel like the Steelers are actually a better defense than the Patriots. And statistically, everybody could prove me wrong with that, and no doubt about it. You probably have plenty of information. But the Steelers, their takeaways are different in my mind because of how they're getting them. They are getting takeaways and turnovers because they're getting pressure on a quarterback. Mm-hmm. They're getting after him. It's sack, forced fumbles. It's quarterback getting hit. And that's how the interceptions are happening. The Patriots, all their takeaways were tip balls, bad throws, interceptions by corners, safeties, linebackers in coverage. The Patriots don't have anybody up front to scare you. I mean, every down, it may be a different guy coming free because of scheme, But the Steelers have guys that you've got a game plan for. We've got – where is T.J. Watt? When we break the huddle, where's 90? There he is. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about Bud Dupree? Where is he at? Oh, okay, by the way, we're going to fan out on both sides to give help to our tackles. Well, guess who's one-on-one now? Cam Hayward, and he's putting the guard back in the lap of the quarterback. So they've got legitimate ass kickers up front, which to me changes everything on the back end.
I mean, yeah, they're putting eight guys. They're dropping eight guys now with very often, and still getting to the QB doing it that way.
Yeah.
T.J. Watt, defensive player of the year at this point, right?
I mean, he should definitely be in the category.
Who else would it be at this point?
Shaq Barrett has kind of fallen off. I think Chandler Jones is leading the league in sacks right now, so that's always a big factor.
Oh, come on, we're not going to give it to a guy who's on a team that's
Stephon Gilmore.
And Stephon Gilmore.
Gilmore. I mean, I tell you, it's hard. I feel like as a corner, it's such a hard award to win because the sacks kind of...
Because if you get got... It's one of those things, if you get got 1 week, then people will point to that. Yeah, but Nuke Hopkins worked him over that 1 week.
Yeah, and I mean...
You can go a couple weeks without a sack and still stay in the mix for that award.
Jamie Collins was probably in the conversation.
I would agree with that at some point,
I think Jamal Adams was probably creeping into the conversation before he got hurt. You know, Bobby Wagner, I feel like, is kind of always in that conversation. You know, it does feel like the sacks are a little bit down this year. Like, Aaron Donald doesn't have the big numbers that he had last year. Chris Jones as well. They both were candidates for that. It feels like it's very competitive this year. It's pretty wide open.
Let me throw this. I'm jumping all over the place because I want to get to a bunch of stuff here before we
Finish it up. Logan Ryan's kind of a guy under the radar that should be.
Oh, come on. We're not going to do that, though, right, are we?
I mean.
That's fine.
Kid's balling out. He's somebody that nobody's talking about.
It's true, and he's the rare exception that proves the rule that when you leave the Patriots, you stay good. Almost nobody does that.
Right. Except when you go to Tennessee Titans, who were led by Mike Vrabel, who was a Patriot coach.
Yeah, you know what? Vrabel, I keep skipping over him. I always say Bill O'Brien is the gold standard of the Belichick coaching tree, but I guess Mike Vrabel is closing in on that and is going to steal that award. Bowl twice in the final 3 weeks for the AFC South.
100%.
Who's going to get that, by the way?
Tennessee.
You think they go down to Houston this week? Here's the path. Houston goes. They have Tampa plus two with the Titans.
Right. Tennessee has
Pittsburgh goes. Bills on Sunday night in Pittsburgh. Then at the Jets, and then they finish with the Ravens. And the good news for the Steelers with that is, if the Ravens keep winning, they aren't going to need Week 17. And I think in talking to Jeff Zerebiak, among others, with the Ravens, the beat writer there, that they're not going to throw Lamar out there against that defense. You wouldn't want a team that needs the game. You wouldn't want to throw him against that.
Let Trace McSorley cut his teeth.
Or RG3 either way.
Put RG3 out there because I don't want him to get hurt, because now if something happens to Lamar in the playoffs, then you have to play McSorley. So play McSorley Week 17, save RG3 and Lamar.
I think that the Ravens, as much as I think that they're going to the Super Bowl, and based on the numbers and historical evidence would indicate that a team doing what they're doing in terms of margin of victory and all that kind of stuff, and getting one of those buys and it shaping up that it's likely all going through Charm City to get to the Super Bowl. But I think that I do see teams rightly that could beat them. If the weather's right, I could see Patrick Mahomes going in there and just dropping it on and just, you know, breaking their hearts in the span of 4 minutes. Like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, whoa, he just hung 14 on us in the middle of the second quarter, and now we got to figure out how to rally. The other one is the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills, based on what we just saw on Sunday, because they will be liberated from any expectation. If they have to go in, let's say they go on the road and they win a wild card round game, and they're not even out of contention yet for the AFC East, but let's say they win their first round game. If they go into Baltimore in the second, there will be no pressure on them to win. It will all be, and really in a lot of ways, the Bills are kind of like the Ravens. You know, I know they're not running the same proper offensive attack, but you can see the similarities kind of in the two teams.
In a different way. They both have quarterbacks that are really tough to take down in their own different way. I think Buffalo has a scoring problem, and that showed up against Baltimore in that game. And really what showed up is that they don't have a third down answer. If you take Cole Beasley away, which they did, Josh Allen was lost. And now if he can't beat you with his legs, Josh is not – if you're going to ask him to throw the ball 40 times in a game, that's an L. So Buffalo, they have to get the lead. They've got to find a way to grind it out. like they beat the Cowboys. So I think that's why I like Baltimore over Buffalo in that conversation, because Baltimore has shown that they can light it up. Now, what we haven't seen from Baltimore is this year, we haven't seen them down early. We haven't seen them have to say, you know what, we did.
It was long ago against KC.
Yeah, it was like
KC.
Week 3, right? It was
right.
It was
that's
Kansas
the
City.
One. And I keep saying,
and that
you
happened
know,
last year too.
And you remember the Jenga theory that if you take the wrong guy out, I don't know why this is true, but when the Ravens have Jimmy Smith and then they throw Marcus Peters in too, but when Jimmy Smith is in there, the defense is different. So I don't even think you can hang that much on what we saw in September, but that's your evidence.
The other thing that makes me lean towards Baltimore is their offensive line is playing so much better than Buffalo's. And Baltimore has overcome losing their center. He went down with an ACL, and they've had their backup center come in there, but they haven't missed a beat. But Baltimore's offensive line, their tackles, Ronnie Stanley and Orlando Brown, are phenomenal, and they're just smashing people. Marshall Yanda, Bradley Bozeman on the left guard, they're doing a great job. So I like their offensive line. I like their ability. Say, in the playoffs, you never know. Okay, you want to play Buffalo? You want to play Baltimore in January? It could be a blizzard. It could be, you know, a sloppy conditions. I like Baltimore's ability to win a game like that.
Well, you know, that it now all of a sudden, if the Bills can vanquish Pittsburgh on Sunday night, the division can be theirs. I think. I'm not 100% sure,
Buffalo,
though.
Buffalo's got to beat New England.
Yeah,
if they beat
Pittsburgh and then beat New England, does that give them the division? Do you know off the top of your head there, Spaghetti?
That would be interesting.
Why isn't your microphone on, Eddie Spaghetti? Just keep your microphone on.
Because I don't want to breathe into it. Well, you guys are doing the talking.
Well, you can jump into our conversation. I'm sure you have some Giants-related questions at least.
I got a lot of Giants thoughts going on.
That bum NFC East. It's an embarrassment.
We did kind of gloss over Eli.
We'll get to it, but I want to talk about a couple things quickly. First of all, give me a couple things quick. Bills Steelers, who wins that game?
Bills Steelers.
Because that Matt, I mean, the defense, the pass rush.
I like the Bills winning that game.
Do you?
The Duck Dynasty is not there yet, so I think this Bills defense is legit. I mean, they harass Tom Brady. Look, the Steelers beat up on the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray is as athletic as he is. He's the most sacked quarterback in the league. So that offense is still going through a lot of growing pains, but I think Buffalo. They are a tough out. They are physical. I wasn't throwing shade on their offensive line. They do want to play smash mouth football. I really like Cody Ford. He's been a big addition to them. I think their left tackle, Deion Dawkins, has done a really good job. And I think John Brown, Cole Beasley, like they've got some things going on for them offensively, but their defense is really driving that ship. So I think this could be a really tough game offensively for the Steelers.
Well, they do get back Juju Smith-Schuster, and they get back James Conner, and they have been surviving throwing the ball to James Washington and Deontay Johnson and the like, and you wonder if those guys who otherwise wouldn't have gotten the touches, wouldn't have gotten the targets, have now elevated and are at a different level than they otherwise might have been had Juju been healthy this whole time. I wonder if that makes a fact, if that's a factor, but I'm with you in all likelihood there, and then it raises the specter of the might the Bills actually pass the Patriots and win the division and send the Patriots certainly on the road? And even if they do win, if they're a three seed, the Patriots, if they fall back and the Chiefs catch them, now they have no wiggle room. They lose a game and the Chiefs win out, then they're certainly a road team for three. And there's zero history of Tom Brady and the Patriots winning three games to get to the Super Bowl. Quickly, Baker Mayfield talking bad about his own the medical staff, big deal or no?
Just dumb. You know what? Like you got to, there's a way to handle things like that. Hey, look, I don't talk about other players and I certainly don't talk about other players' injuries. Like the rule number one as a player, you don't talk about other players.
Is it getting to be now almost two full seasons in, everybody makes it, well, he's fiery. Is it too much now? Or is he going to take a turn more mature? Cause he is whatever he is, 24, I'm guessing, or thereabouts. Or is this Baker Mayfield and deal with it.
Look, it's okay to have an opinion. It's okay to
I
have
agree
thoughts
usually.
And all that stuff. But as a quarterback, you got to keep them to yourself. And it's not about being fiery. It's not about, hey, man, this is who I am, and I'm not going to change. No. You don't have to change, but you have to filter it. And that's it. And if I'm Freddie Kitchens, if I'm the Browns, look, this is what we're expecting of you. Because when you speak, it's louder than any other player here, and it resonates, and there's a ripple effect. So you need to understand that. Was your intentions good? Yes. My dad used to always tell me, the road to hell is lined with good intentions. All right? Nobody cares about what your intent was. You talked bad about your training staff, the fact that you didn't think that that was going to be taken in a bad way, that worries me more than actually what you said.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. No one considers themselves. I'm not saying Baker Mayfield is evil or bad or anything, but yes, nobody. That's a good reminder always for the human condition. Nobody considers themselves evil. I'm doing this to be evil.
Right. I wasn't trying to be mean. I wasn't trying to throw an interception, but you shouldn't throw that ball into that window because, you know, bad things can happen.
I mean, there are a couple
as
times
a quarterback,
you've said
your
some...
job is to take care of the football. As a quarterback, your job is to take care of the franchise verbally.
You and Maurice and some other people have intentionally been mean to me before. But for the most part, you don't go out of your way to do it.
Yeah, but that's just because nobody likes you. That's not because we're
fair.
Not trying to be
fair.
Nice.
I don't like myself, so I agree. Le'Veon Bell, did you ever... You're an Iron Man. I don't think you ever missed an NFL game. But
I did.
You ever heard
I
anything like this
couple.
Before? He's
no.
sick? Like, yeah, you're not playing. You're not playing. All right, I'm going to go bowling late night.
what
is he doing?
I don't know. I mean,
no one's going to see you, Le'Veon?
Le'Veon Bell, like... The things that have transpired over the last year and a half have really made me feel differently about one of the best running backs that this league has seen in the last 20 years. Like, we should be talking about the greatness that Le'Veon Bell is and was. And instead, we're talking about all this other nonsense. And it's a shame because when you look at what he was doing in Pittsburgh, it was unbelievable.
It's almost like you're talking about another skill position guy who played in Pittsburgh for a stretch there.
Yeah, it does. And listen, those two obviously were in cahoots, you know, and they cared more about themselves. It's a team game. And you know what? It's okay to care about yourself. Go play golf. Go play tennis. Go be a swimmer. But this is a team game. When you step into a huddle, the reason why the huddle is a circle is because we're all looking at each other, and it's the circle of trust. And we're all counting on each other, and I'm counting on you to be your best. If you're sick and you can't play, listen, we get it. Get right, all right? And as a player who misses a game, you should be so disappointed and distraught that you don't get to go out there with your teammates, with your brothers, that the last thing on my mind the night before a game, even if I wasn't playing, was to go out and do something. I was scared to go out to dinner on a Friday night if I was hurt because I didn't want to be out on my feet.
In New York, of course, somebody's going to see you, right?
Yeah, you're not going to. I mean, people are going to find you. They're going to see you. But you should be getting treatment. If you're sick, you should be at home getting rest. I mean, stay out of the gutter.
Has anybody even asked the most important question, what did you bowl? Was it even worth your time? Because if you broke 200 now, that's good bowling. You know, like he was 26 and then Jerome Bettis was 36. He was a high-end bowler. I think he's even bowled a 300 before.
Creep,
we got to go?
Creep can roll, man.
It's getting to that time. Yeah,
it's Sean. Getting to that time. Okay. All right. O'Hara's got to go do his fancy TV show. So let's wrap it up here then. Just trying to make sure we got everything. Boy, the way it's safe. Spaghetti, I told you the 49ers are going to go down there and beat that Saints team. Now they have. Who do you think winds up with the number one seed? O'Hara, quick answer. You got the Packers in the mix there. The Saints have fallen to 3, but of course the Niners still have to play up in Seattle. And the way these things can bounce all over the place, if Seattle beats San Francisco, then the big benefit. But also the Packers, now at the 2 seed, still have to play in Minnesota. And Minnesota conceivably could fall out of the playoffs, and they can still win the division. The Packers are very unlikely to fall out of the picture, but if Minnesota loses that game to Green Bay and the Rams win out, the Rams can still sneak in the back door. There's still much to be determined here is the point. Give me your number one seed in the NFC, because to me this is massively important. If it's in the Superdome versus anywhere else, it's a huge difference for that side of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a two-dog race, really, between the 49ers and the Saints. You know, look, the Packers, I mean, they've got the Bears and the Vikings, like you said. Those are two tough outs. But I still think, even though they lost the game, the Saints, to me, still are built to win out and to win in the playoffs more than the 49ers, because the 49ers, just even though they won the game, they lost the battle. They lost their starting center, Weston Richburg, Torres Patella. That's going to be tough to replace. Ben Garland did a great job filling in, but now it's different, all right? Now we've lost our sixth man. They've already been banged up with Staley, McGlinchey. D. Ford tweaked his hammy again. Sherman tweaked his hammy. So they're coming out.
He's out for a while.
They're limping
right
out of that W, which kind of scares you, because, like you said, they've got to play Atlanta, they got to play the Rams, and then they got to go to Seattle. Now, The 49ers, they're kind of that charm team right now, right? Or actually, they when you look at that win right there, that was a huge win for them because they should have beat Seattle.
Right.
Right. They lose that game because the kicker missed the field goal. So I think they're the best team in the NFC, but I think the Saints could end up being the number one seed.
I'm kind of with you, but I also – so let's get back to where we started this conversation. So you think the Titans do end up getting in. Pittsburgh falls out, and the Bills get the 5 seed is how you see that one?
Yeah, I think the Bills get in. I think Tennessee gets in.
I don't like your talk. By the way, Derrick Henry is with that hammy. If he goes out, how massive is that? Can Ryan Tannehill, can they be a throw-it-all-over-the-place team without the big guy behind them?
No, I don't think they're going to become a throw-it-all-over-the-place team. And I think that definitely changes that run game a little bit. Deion Lewis, though, I tell you what, he filled in for Derrick Henry when Derrick Henry has missed a couple times. Deion Lewis runs hard. Now, the question really is, if Derrick Henry ends up missing some time, will they still stay patient with that run game? Because that is what has opened things up for Tannehill.
They're not going to give Deion Lewis 20, 25 carries, though.
I mean, you almost have to just to protect Tannehill. And I think the reason why Tannehill looks so good right now is because he's been extremely accurate, but the big chunk plays are there because of that run game because of what Derrick Henry's doing.
And then last thing, Eli Manning, a starting quarterback in 2020?
I think this is it.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Eli would love to play. I don't know if he can wholeheartedly put on another uniform. And I think playing for the New York Giants has meant more to him than just the job title and just being the quarterback of an NFL team. So I think he would love to play another year or two. I think he still loves preparing. He loves everything that it takes to get ready for a season. But I just don't think at this point in his life, in his career, with his family, you know, I don't see him going somewhere else to try to spark a 2 or 3 year run.
And also, practically, where really is that spot? I mean, maybe what's a funny, neat little ironic completion of his pro circle would be to go to the Chargers, I guess. And that would be I just don't know that the Chargers.
I think we already know how Eli feels about the Chargers.
Still, he still feels that way. Still. He wouldn't want to throw to Keenan Allen. All right, I'm holding out hope to see some big name guy go there because I assume Phil's on his way out. I don't know where Phil's going to land next year.
I mean, if you're the Chargers, you're going to go from Phillip Rivers to Eli Manning. I mean, that's
no. I'm just year. I don't know. I wonder where they're at, what NFL team is looking at either Eli or even Phil the way he's played this year, like, and said like, oh yeah, that'll fix us.
That's like trading an 85 sheepdog in for a moped or a little scooter.
Oh, I'm definitely telling Eli and Phil that.
And even if you can get 70 miles to the gallon on that hog.
So you're not a big duck guy, huh? That's my takeaway from this entire conversation. You're not in on the duck experience. It's very exciting.
Look,
do you see they're liberated from expectation? Don't you see that there's no supposed to there? That's what's great.
No, I don't want my quarterback's nickname to be Duck. That means as an offensive lineman, I'm not doing my job.
You know what I love is that you stick with your brand. That's the best, that you constantly, with every team we went over here, you touch on the offensive line. And it's not jive that is, unsexy as it is, we always make that point, that the teams that make not get into the playoffs, the deep playoff runs, consistently control both sides of the line of scrimmage. That if you go through the last 10, 15 years, the teams that you often find in that final four, like, oh, why are they? It doesn't seem like they have the great skill guy. Who's their number one? Doesn't matter. They dominate. Yeah. They can run on you when they want to. Don't get to their QB. They get to your QB. That's basically.
Just look at the O-lines in the Super Bowls. Last year, it was the Rams. Their offensive line was kicking butt, taking names. Patriots, I mentioned how good their guards were last year. They played phenomenal. The year before that, it was the Eagles. You know, they had an unbelievable run game. Their offensive line played really well. It's a no-brainer.
I could go on and on with O'Hare. We didn't even get into food or anything, Spaghetti. Yeah, well, you know what? You ask off the air. You ask O'Hare all your New York football Giants-related questions.
Bring it.
But thank you very much, O'Hare. Thank you, Eddie Spaghetti. And thank you, the listener, for listening to this one-day-delayed Dave Damaschek football program. We appreciate you checking it out. We'll be back already tomorrow with another episode for you with the Week 15 Game Picks, Red Challenge Flag style with Matt Money Smith and, not Handsome Hank. He's out tomorrow. Want to come by, O'Hare? You're more than welcome to pop in there.
All right.
We'll look forward to seeing you on Good Morning Football on Saturday again. And with all that being said, thanks to Zaxby's as well. Talk to you tomorrow. Until then, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.